I don't know if I've ever told you about my friend, Bubba. Bubba's retired now, and he likes to fish. He was sitting in his boat the other day, and he heard a voice say, "Pick me up." And he looked around and didn't see anybody, and he thought maybe he just was dreaming. And so he went back to fishing, and the voice again said, "Pick me up." And he looked around again, looked over the side of the boat, and there was a frog floating there. And he looked at the frog and he said, "Are you talking to me?" And the frog said, "Yes, I'm talking to you. Pick me up and kiss me, and I'll turn into the most beautiful woman you've ever seen in your life. And I'll make all of your friends envious because I'll marry you." And Bubba looked at the frog and reached over in a minute and gently picked it up. And he had on overalls, and he opened up the pocket and put the frog in the pocket. And the frog was quiet for just a minute, and he said, "Hey, are you crazy? I told you that if you'd kiss me, I'd turn into a beautiful woman and I'd marry you." And Bubba opened up his overalls and looked in there, and he said, "Nah, at my age, I'd rather have a talking frog." That's Bubba. As we've already said, tonight's lesson will be a bit abbreviated so we can all stay and celebrate with our young folks their accomplishment at LTC. And I want to encourage everyone to stay, whether you have a child who attended or not, and I want to tell you why tonight. It's going to take me a minute, so I'll get around to it. Hang with me, okay? I'm enjoying hearing the history of the beginning of the church on Wednesday, read aloud on Wednesday nights. I'm pretty amazed. The Lord's truly given Gary a talent for reading out loud, hasn't he? He has a beautiful reading voice. The book of Acts is a history book, and it's based around two remarkable churches and their influence on the world. And it's also based around the story of two remarkable men and their influence on the world. The two churches are the Jerusalem Church of Christ and the Antioch Church of Christ. And the two men are Peter, who was a member of the Jerusalem Church, and Saul, who was a member of the Antioch Church. And one church became, if you will, the mother church for the Jewish Christians, and the other one became the mother church for the Gentile Christians. Of course, since God determined early on that the gospel would first be preached in Jerusalem and Judea, then the Jerusalem church was the first church. So the story of the Jerusalem church and its influence is told in the first 10 chapters of the book of Acts. And then in the middle of chapter 11, something kind of strange happens. Some unknown Christian who had fled Jerusalem because of the persecution that ensued following Stephen's death was so zealous that he didn't know any better than to go to a Gentile city and to preach the gospel. And interestingly enough, a lot of folks started being baptized there. And that made some ripples in the church, and those ripples quickly spread like wildfire back to Jerusalem. And Jerusalem sent Barnabas to check it out. Now, I don't know why they sent Barnabas, because they had sent Peter and John to check out a similar rumor in Samaria just a short time earlier, back in chapter 8. But whatever their reason was, they picked the right man. They knew what they were doing. And they picked the right man for a couple of reasons. One is because the Christians there certainly needed some reassurance. And they needed some encouragement. And you know, the world always needs a little encouragement, doesn't it? In fact, we all could do with a little encouragement pretty regularly in our lives, couldn't we? And Barnabas was living up to his name, because his name means son of encouragement. And in Acts chapter 11, beginning in verse 22, it says, news of this, and that is a large number of people believing and turning to the Lord, reached the ears of the church at Jerusalem, and they sent Barnabas to Antioch. When he arrived and saw the evidence of the grace of God, he was glad and encouraged them all to remain true to the Lord with all their hearts. And verse 24 says, he was a good man, full of the Holy Spirit and faith. And Barnabas was a good man, probably for lots of reasons, but one of the reasons is that he put the needs of others before himself, didn't he? He put himself in the place of other people, and he felt what they felt. And he knew when there was a tendency to be discouraged, and that's when he wanted to be in somebody's life, when they were discouraged, so that he could encourage them. But you realize that Barnabas could have made himself quite a reputation there at Antioch, because that was one of the fastest growing churches that there ever has been. And he could have become the preacher of an extremely large church had that been his goal. But he thought of somebody else who needed some encouragement. And that's the second reason that the church at Jerusalem really knew what they were doing when they sent Barnabas. And they evidently gave Barnabas a lot of latitude when they sent him. Barnabas knew a guy who was having a hard time getting on the right path to being a Christian. In fact, this guy had made a pretty poor first impression to Christians, hadn't he? And Barnabas had already taken him to the elders and the leaders of the church at Jerusalem and stood up for him when other people weren't speaking very highly of him, when they were casting a lot of doubt on his reputation. Then Barnabas had already stood up for him to the church there at Jerusalem. When he had tried to become a part of the church as a young Christian, but that hadn't ended too well. As a matter of fact, they had to get Barnabas out of town to keep him from being killed. And the last time that they had seen each other, he was put on a boat going for Tarsus. But he believed that this young man had a lot of potential. Potential that others didn't see. He believed in him. And he went to find him. And he traveled a long ways and went to a lot of trouble to look him up. And then when he found him, it doesn't tell us, but I suspect he had to do some persuading to get him to leave and come with him. And he had to encourage him. And he had to, in some way, envision what he saw for the future of the church at Antioch and tell Saul, I believe you've got a place here. I believe that you're needed in this place. In chapter 11, picking up in verse 25, then Barnabas went to Tarsus to look for Saul, and when he found him, he brought him to Antioch. So for a whole year, Barnabas and Saul met with the church and taught great numbers of people, and the disciples were first called Christians at Antioch. Because of Barnabas' encouragement, the great apostle Paul was born. And one of the greatest, strongest, most evangelistic churches in all of history was established, the church at Antioch. Now let me tell you another story. Completely, the curtains come down, okay? It's going to rise up again here on another complete different scene. About a guy that I met when I was a young preacher. And as a matter of fact, I had just graduated from school, went to Hattiesburg, Mississippi as the first place that I was preaching, and immediately began to have Romans classes in my home. And you know, I believe that when we're truly searching for God, God brings people together. We don't know it when it happens. We don't recognize it immediately. But we can look back in retrospect quite often in our lives and see that God had to have had a hand to bring us in contact with certain people in our lives. And this young man had just graduated from college, roughly my age, and he needed a Romans class as much as anybody I've ever known. And he was as receptive to it as anybody I've ever known. He was a Christian, but he was having a really hard time getting things lined out in his life. Today, he's a gospel preacher, and as a matter of fact, he's an instructor at one of our Christian universities. And I will say, not out of false modesty, that he is a better preacher, he is a better teacher, and very probably a better Christian man than I am. And I would sit at his feet as a student any day. This past week, I received a letter from him. And at the risk of embarrassing myself, I'm going to share part of that letter with you. Ken, I'm usually in such a rush that I don't take time to slow down and say things that need to be said. Do you know some teachers from high school that just stand out in your mind as people you have tremendous respect for? In my case, Coach Calhoun was one of those. I never had a class under him except gym. He carried a paddle and he put 2x4. Surely it wasn't a 2x4, maybe a 1x4, okay? But anyway, he put 2x4, which I received occasionally along with hundreds of others. I literally feared him. I quit the football team after making first string, and one of my coaches came to my house urging my mother to get me back on the team. But Coach Calhoun, a former Golden Gloves boxer, never said a word to me about it. And he was one of the football coaches. When I was a senior and walking to my school bus, which I drove, one day I felt a strong hand on my shoulder. I looked over, and the hand that was on me was, you guessed it, Coach Calhoun. What he said to me was said 42 years ago, but it was just as if he had said it this morning. I was so afraid he was going to let me have it for quitting the football team. I looked at him with his strong hand on my shoulder, and he said, and he called my friend's name, "We're expecting great things out of you." That's all he said. But man, wow. It stuck with me. I'd like to tell him what that means to me, even today. But he died a couple of years ago. You know what I mean? We have people like that from our past who have been sent by God to shape our lives. Why am I telling you this, brother? I know of no one who has had any more impact in my life, with the exception of my dad, than you. And now I'm going to omit the next couple of paragraphs and skip to the end. I'm glad I got to tell you that before one of us leaves this world. Your devoted brother and friend, always. I think that the greatest, or at least one of the greatest needs that every young person has in their life, is to have someone that they look up to believe in them, number one. Number two, to express that faith in them. And number three, to make some kind of an investment in time or energy or some kind of a commitment to push them toward that goal that they themselves cannot see. You see, you can see things in these young people that they can't see in themselves. You can see potential in them that they can't see in themselves. And if nobody ever comes up to them and says, "Did you know that you could be fill in the blank?" then they'll never know that. Somebody has to plant a seed. And it really doesn't have to be something that's just really outstanding. You don't have to wait for the giants to come along. You take advantage of the little bitty opportunities, the little times to tell somebody that you're proud of them, the little times to tell somebody that you believe in them and that you're proud of what they've done. You see, I don't know what talents you have or what talents you don't have, but I know that there is something that every single one of us here tonight can do. We can encourage a young person. And we can make a practice of that in our lives. We can let them know that we're proud of them when they do something good, and we can say an encouraging word. And I promise you this. Now, I don't promise you this. The Lord promises you this. The bread that you cast on the water will come back. God's word will not return to him void. When you encourage someone, you plant a seed in their life that is going to have an effect. And you think it won't. You think that that young person doesn't want to have anything to do with me because I'm an old person. You tell yourself that. And they're not going to tell you any different. But it's not true. They need to hear you say, I'm proud of you. They need to hear you say, did you know that you can become whatever? You fill in the blank. Don't tell yourself that they don't care what you think. Stay for the celebration. Don't leave tonight. If I were in the congregation that I left, and I can prove this because you can call them and ask them, then I would say, I'm going to lock the door and stand in front of it and not let you out until you go by these young people and you put your arm around them and you tell them that you're proud of them. Now, I'm not going to say that to you because you don't know me that well, and you might knock my block off if I say that. But when you've been somewhere about 12 or 13 or 14 years, you can say that. And someday, Lord willing, I'll say that to you, that I'm not going to let you out until you go by those young people and you tell them how proud you are of them. Our kids are not out making trouble, and that's a big deal, folks. That's a big deal. They're trying to please you. They're trying to please the Lord. They're trying to make you proud of them, and I am. And I want them to know it. And I want everybody to know it. Don't you? Well, let's stand and sing.